there's no animosity between the mm-hmm. students, athletes, and the faculty mm-hmm. and other students mm-hmm. that I knew of. I never encountered any. Mm-hmm. I encountered nothing but cooperation, help in those days. Mm-hmm. Assistance, you know, if you needed some extra time, they'd take it.
Yeah.
I know, in one class, economics class, I was tired. I don't know where we'd been somewhere, and I fell asleep in the classroom. The instructor came and pushed me. He said, "Mr. Branstetter," he said, "this is a class. You ought to wake up and listen to what's going on." I said, "Yes, sir." But no, I can honestly say that it was a good relationship, mm-hmm. and they supported. Of course, Hannah was a great supporter of athletics, mm-hmm. as you know. And,
well, that was my question. I mean, your support, obviously you had been an important athlete while you were an undergrad here, and then mm-hmm. as a faculty member, it seems to be an important part of the story of the last 50 years in particular, the rise of the university, both as in athletics and also academics.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, you were involved with it. And that's why I wondered if you had any continuing contact with in athletics or just as a fan or that sort of thing.
I supported them, but I had no contact with mm-hmm. them. If I knew somebody, I'd make it a point to help them if they needed help. Mm-hmm. But I have a different concept of law enforcement than most people. What bothered me when we teach in the training that officers get today and used to get and still do, I guess, the emphasis was on arrest and detention, you know. And that's still true in many cases today. Well, I'm a great believer in crime prevention. Mm-hmm. You can prevent a lot of activities, negative activities, by working well with individuals. I had a group of young men, for example, I cite this as an experience, a couple experiences similar to this. When I was a police officer in uniform in the 4th Precinct in Detroit, I had a beat. It was a triangular beat, and you'd go up one side like this and come across on West 4th Street. 4th
Close
Street
to downtown.
Is a major thoroughfare in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Are you from Detroit?
Mm-hmm. I'm not. I grew up north of Grand Rapids, but I did my research at the Detroit Public Library on Main Street. So I know some of Detroit. So it was right downtown.
Yeah, right downtown. Mm-hmm. This is way out toward River Rouge.
Okay.
4th Street runs out that mm-hmm. way. You know, it's one of the main thoroughfares in the city. And apparently they had a bunch of kids, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old youngsters, raising hell. Now this is, well, I was with the precinct, and what happened, there were two drug stores in the precinct, and on this beat, two drug stores. One was owned and operated by the sister of the mayor of the city of Detroit. And the other one was a private guy who encouraged the kids to hang around his place. If they hung around her place, her drugstore, which they did, she would get angry and call the police department, and they'd come out and they would swear at these kids. And you're too young to remember, but in those days, alleys were paved with stones. White stones, paved, if we want to call it that. And these kids would get these stones, they'd throw stones at the police. Well, needless to say, these guys couldn't catch these kids. They were young, they'd disappear in the neighborhood, you know, mm-hmm. just like flies. But anyway, they decided this college cop that had been assigned to the 4th Precinct should take a stab at this problem. And and again, I said I believed in talking to people and visiting with them and saying what the problem is and helping them if you can. So I went out there and I started walking this beat, and they had to call in every hour. We had that call system, telephone. And I got to know many of the kids. I urged them to call me Art. They did, but the vandalism was still going on. Cars were being beat up, and tires were stolen, and you know, the kind of thing kids will do. And they had a leader, a kid that was as big as I was in those days. So one night at a, they had an activity going on at the high school. It was a high school in the area. Off the beat, off my beat, obviously, but high school. There was some social affair going on, play or something. And I made my call in the call box, and they asked me to go over to the high school and check on it because there were a bunch of kids there and they were disturbing the activity, the play. So I went over there, and there's these kids that I've been talking to. So I called them together, and I said, "Now look, this has got to stop." I said, "You can't keep on." And the leader, their leader, so-called, was there, and I said, "You got to get out of here and stop this, and you can't do these things and get away with it. Now I'm telling you bluntly and frankly that if you do, you're going to get in deep trouble." And I said, "If you want to fight about this, fine." I said, "I'll take my jacket off and put my, and we'll go to it." Well, need to say, this kid looked at me and he couldn't believe it. And all of a sudden he turned around and left. Well, psychologically, I had these kids right where I wanted. He lost face in that group. And from that point on, those kids didn't do anything wrong. And I got one of them to go to CMTC camp in those days, Citizens Military Training Camp. And I found some of them jobs they looked for. These are the kind of things, and worked out real well. Mm-hmm. This vandalism stopped, and this college cop was doing pretty good, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you'd had some psychology, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it worked real well. And
Did you continue that emphasis on crime prevention in at the School of Criminal Justice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We talked about getting an interest in young people or people's lives, helping them if you can, and do that sort of thing. Yeah.
Cheaper expenditure then.
Absolutely.
And later on for incarceration.
Yeah. And we'd help kids in school. It's like, there was a kid that was stealing the women's clothing, and the youngster that was stealing chemicals out of the chemistry department. He'd go through these tunnels, by the way.
Yeah.
Forgot to mention that. He'd get up in the chemistry and other places, apparently. And it worked. Well, I got transferred. When I was transferred, folks from the route, my beat, came down to the station asking they not transfer me. It was real, I never forgot that. Mm-hmm. Real nice of them, and one of the great experiences that I had. And it just proved what I believed, that you know, you can be kind to people. You don't have to arrest everybody, throw them in jail, and that's what they did in those days, and they still do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. After your retirement, were you involved in community activities in East Lansing at all?
I worked closely with the chief of police, Charlie Pegg, who since died several years ago. Charlie is a lieutenant, one of my lieutenants, came out of the service when we hired him as an officer, and he became a lieutenant. I worked with him, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. And anytime we needed help, and incidentally, when I was chief in East Lansing, the departments were consolidated into one department. Mm-hmm. And Hannah wanted them separated, ultimately. So he asked me to make a study of this, which I did, and recommended a separation in those days. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. When you first came to campus, did you anticipate that you ultimately end up being here for as many years as you did?
No. No. Matter of fact, I had a job offer at a local corporation, Pontiac, in security work. Mm-hmm. And I had problems with that, and they had problems with me because I was a reserve officer. And this was prior to the war, obviously, and whoever it was that made the decision must have realized that I would be ordered to active duty shortly, since the United States quite obviously was going to get involved mm-hmm. in this war in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the job, and I would have been in security work in the corporate world if that had not happened. So, yeah. But anyway, it was an interesting career. Mm-hmm. I've never regretted it. Mm-hmm. The money wasn't good. even at Michigan State, the most money I ever made at State, as director of the school, chief of police, two jobs at the same time, $35,000 a year.
$35,000.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? Yeah. That's what it was.
Hard to raise a family on that amount.
And we got along. I did a little consulting work, obviously. Mm-hmm. I used to make about $10,000 a year on consulting. Mm-hmm. That helped, but and it's incredible what's going on mm-hmm. over there these days in terms of the salaries. And my job, my whole philosophy, was to upgrade the whole concept of law enforcement mm-hmm. from one of arrest and detention to one of crime prevention. And you couldn't define crime prevention. People mm-hmm. say, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it's what you do with people. You help people, you become friendly with them, you become acceptable, your advice is sought, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, I think you're going to do well. Mm-hmm. And you make friends. And that's what I did. And today, I'm delighted to read about these openings that occur in chief's jobs. They want somebody with a bachelor's or a master's and some with a PhD mm-hmm. on campus. We have this guy who came out of the Flint Police Department, one of our graduates, who's got a PhD.
So your experience as a college cop continued then?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
In the professionalization of the forces.
Professionalization, that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And of course people laughed at me, you know, in those days. Mm-hmm. You're out of your mind. Well, I encountered some then in Detroit, obviously, you know. Mm-hmm. They just didn't believe in it. Mm-hmm. These people would come out to this beat I was assigned to. It was an Italian neighborhood, mm-hmm. so most of the people were immigrants, mm-hmm. and their kids just did what they thought they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of respect for the police, probably.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. The woman, of course, didn't help, mm-hmm. you know, this sister of the mayor of the city, but that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project, and I appreciate you, the time you spent and also your insights.
Good luck.
I do appreciate it. Thank you.
I don't know what else there is to tell you. See, is there any segment of this that might be of interest to you?
Did you have any children that came to the university?
That's a good question. Oh. I have one that graduated from here. My oldest son, Art Jr., played ball there. My kids went to five different schools, five boys, five different schools. Hmm. Our son John came here, started the year, didn't like the big university and all that it implies, and said he didn't want to continue here. I said, fine, where do you want to go? He said, I'm going up to Ferris. So he went up to graduated from Ferris. And then Bob went to junior college for 2 years. He's now in Florida. And Mike went to a small liberal arts college in Nebraska. And Jimmy, the youngest, went to University of Michigan. And we have a lot of fun with him. And he keeps telling me when we ride him about Ann Arbor. He said, Dad, did you ever go to the Rose Bowl? He went to two. He played for Bo Schembechler. And interestingly enough, Bo and he are very good personal friends today. Mm-hmm. And Bo was a hard-nosed football coach. I came back, I was in Detroit one day and was coming back here to East Lansing, and it was on a weekend, Saturday, and I knew that Michigan was having its spring practice. And I thought, well, I'll stop in Ann Arbor, see how Jim's doing. Well, I did. That poor kid. 250 pounds, 6'4" or 5", bloody, dirty, And I walked up to him. I said, "Jim, how are you doing?" He said, "Dad, I'm getting clobbered." Oh, boy. It's interesting how these things work out. Mm-hmm. But today they go on trips together. Mm-hmm. Bo's mellowed. Well, I don't want to take more of your time.
No, that's fine. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I hope it helps.
I'm sure it will.